views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
A light shines on Lyme disease. Limelight Radio with Katina Macris is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential to expand awareness and activate change to eliminate Lyme disease for good. Limelight Radio is a much-needed venue for the USA's number one fastest-spreading infectious illness. Katina is an award-winning author, a natural healthcare practitioner with over 30 years' experience, and most importantly, a healing force with her own personal Lyme journey. Be part of a movement to help end the suffering and confusion surrounding Lyme disease and begin to take action. Now here's your host, Katina Macris.
Then I go to my...
As a recovery of a 10-year healing journey, I know about the confusion and despair and loss so many of you experience with Lyme disease. Our guests are here to help amend the misunderstanding around tick-borne illness and to educate us. And personally, I'm here to create dialogue and promote change. Today, I'm totally delighted to interview a very talented woman who is devoted to the Lyme disease dilemma. She is the author of the award-winning book, Cure Unknown. Pamela Weintraub is a literary and investigative science journalist. She is senior editor at Discover Magazine. Previously, she was editor-in-chief at Omni, where she worked for 16 years in a range of editorial roles. Consulting editor at Psychology Today and executive editor at MAM, Women, Cancer, and Community. Pamela has covered science, health, and biomedicine for the National Press for 25 years with hundreds of articles appearing in Omni, Health, Red Book, Ms., M. McCall's, Audubon, Discover, Women's Day, American Health, Eating Well, Penthouse, Self, Psychology Today, the Los Angeles Times Syndicate, and many others. She was a staff writer for the charter staff of Discover. She's the author of 16 books for major publishers on topics from emergency medicine and parenting to memory and bioterrorism. During the dot-com boom of the late 1990s, Pamela was involved in the founding of a number of internet companies, including one that was ultimately funded with millions of dollars in venture capital and today is in the black. Pamela has a master's degree in science of journalism from Boston University, and I am delighted to welcome you, Pamela Weintraub, to Limelight Radio. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you here. Your book, Cure Unknown, has been a breakthrough book for Lyme disease and one that hundreds of thousands of people have felt such encouragement by, because you opened the lens and showed us what was really going on with this illness. So can you tell me, I know that we have a new edition that's just come out, a five-year update on Cure Unknown. What prompted you to take that on, Pamela, and rewrite or re-examine, really, I should say, what's going on with Lyme disease 5 years later?
Well, there's been a lot of progress in the research and in the questions that were so pressing in the volume that I put out in 2008 that I really felt it was necessary to just create an update. The most important thing I feel has been some of the new studies on persistence have given new weight to the notion that there is a chronic form of Lyme disease, especially experiments in monkeys out of Tulane. Not to say that the research is definitive or that there isn't more research to be done, but it really did give a lot of validity to the patient experience, and I thought that it was important for that reason, among others, to just come out with an update. Another reason I wanted to come out with an update was because I wanted to keep the story alive, and you know, if something is old, it's not as relevant.
Right, and we know, you and I both know, being that we are so intimately involved with the Lyme disease situation and the progress that is happening, that it seems right now, within this past year, almost every other week, something new is being learned.
That's right. There's a lot going on in Lyme disease. And, I mean, one of the most important things, I feel, even though it's something that the people inside the community know, is the CDC announcement just recently that they have verified or validated that there actually are 300,000 cases a year, meeting their definition. Because before, they had put forth the number of 30,000. Everybody knew, including the CDC itself, by the way, that the 30,000 was vastly underreported. But yet, without the additional research, they weren't able to put the larger number out there. And that gives a lot more urgency to the situation.
Definitely, because they were using standards that they had defined, you know, 30 years ago, and trying to just work with those standards. But I think
they're still using those standards. This is just an issue of I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
okay.
The 300,000 itself is probably really quite a low number. It's better than 30,000. But the thing is that their restrictive or circumscribed surveillance definition of Lyme disease, definitely, even including to the CDC itself, definitely does not include all cases. And as we know, with so many strains and genus-based species of Borrelia out there, there are now other forms of Lyme-like diseases that basically are almost a dead ringer for Lyme disease, but are caused by different spirochetes. Those people who have such infections would never test positive on the CDC test, and likewise, people who have perhaps gotten antibiotics for any number of reasons during the early part of an infection, when they don't even know they have Lyme disease, could certainly have their immune response abrogated, and so they would never test positive on the CDC tests. So this 300,000 that the CDC is talking about is still a low number, and it's still, according to it's still a number that adheres to that very restrictive disease definition.
Right, and that, you know, if we're still dealing with that very restrictive definition, as you just said, I had learned a couple weeks ago from talking to a Lyme research doctor that at the peak of the AIDS epidemic back in the 80s, late 80s, 104,000 was the number they were reporting annually to the CDC. So here we are with triple that.
Well, you know, the other thing that's very interesting is that back when I was researching Curanone, I happened to come across the statistic that 95% of HIV was reported. With Lyme disease, it's 10%. So that number that you have for HIV is almost all of HIV. The number that you had, the 30,000, was just, I mean, it was, everybody knew it was only a fraction. But without the CDC getting on board and saying it so that every, you know, newspaper and radio shows that are in the mainstream can freely give those numbers out, and so that people can realize that this is a significant epidemic, I think that was a very important thing that happened just recently.
I agree with you. And I believe also now what's happening is the average American is alert to the fact that, oh gosh, there is this illness and ticks carry it. While before, they might not have thought twice about it. You know, when I was a child growing up, we didn't think about ticks carrying anything but Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So now different regions of the country are waking up to the reality that, geez, Lyme disease is maybe not just up in New England. It could be anywhere in this country.
That's right. Well, there's a lot of, obviously, there is a different zoonosis or cycle of ticks and hosts for Lyme disease out in California and Oregon, the western states. There are, there is down south, you've got the vector of the Lone Star tick, which has become very controversial because it creates a rash that's almost a dead ringer for the Lyme erythema migrans rash. But a lot of people, including the CDC, seem to be saying that in the South, it's the rash and even the symptoms could be an allergy to tick saliva as opposed to any kind of borreliosis, which is really, really a disturbing thing because then people wouldn't be treated for an infection.
This is interesting, Pamela. I have to understand this one a little bit more now, now that you've said this to me. So what the doctors in the South are suggesting, if I heard this properly, is that circular bullseye rash that we associate with Lyme disease and is potentially carried by the Lone Star tick, they're not acknowledging that it could be an infection. They're saying it's just an allergic rash.
Right. At Discover Magazine, we were so fascinated by what was going on here that we actually commissioned an investigative report on this. And we found a science journalist. Her name is Wendy Oren. She was a professor at Emory. And she lived, her only connection to the story was she lived in the South. She didn't have Lyme disease. But she was a great journalist. And we just said to her, and she was a journalist who specialized in reporting on infectious diseases. We set her loose on the story. We asked her to investigate it and just say, tell us what you find, whatever it was. And she just was sucked into this story. She ended up reporting it for 3.5 years.
Wow.
So convoluted and complicated and internecine is the story. And we're doing an ebook now on it at Discover, which is going to be coming out in a couple of months.
Oh my gosh. Pam, guess what? I just realized the time. We have to go to a station break. Can we come back, though? I want to hear more about this ebook that Discover is working on. That sounds fascinating. Stay with us, everybody. We're going to station break and come back with Pamela Weintraub.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time, on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Where do you desire to go in life? How do you plan to get there? Are you only looking outside yourself for the answers? What if you use your soul's wisdom to lead the way? So what is the soul, and how do you access its wisdom? Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen will unpack these questions and help you tap into and trust your own inner voice to solve everyday problems. Your Soul Suitcase is a treasure chest of wisdom inside you waiting to be discovered. Listen to Soul Suitcase on TransformationTalkRadio.com and discover how awakening to your inner voice transforms your life.
What if there's nothing wrong with you? What if you're far greater than you've ever given yourself credit for? What if it's time to know the gift and the contribution you are to the world and to like yourself a lot more? Hi, my name is Dane here. 13 years ago, I started to truly ask questions. Actually, I started to be the question, and everything changed for me. Asking questions opens doors to infinite possibilities. And it's not about finding the answer. It's about being the question, always. What I'm inviting you to step into is something that Einstein, Marie Curie, Newton, Da Vinci, Gandhi, Picasso, and Aristotle all knew to be true. What if no question is too big or too small? What if anything is possible for you? What if together we could create a kinder, gentler, happier world? Is now the time? Go to beingyouclass.com and sign up for a free video series, My Gift to You. Beingyouclass.com. What if you, truly being you, are the gift and change this world requires? Beingyouclass.com.
Hi, this is Katina Macris of Limelight Radio. Do you or someone you know suffer with Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, MS, allergies, loss of wellness? I did. An advanced cell training has been a restorative, self-healing modality, bringing renewed health and energy to my life. Thousands of others rave about the remarkable success Gary Bleier's cutting-edge healing approach at AdvancedCellTraining.com creates. Request their free DVD for self-healing work in the comfort of your own home at AdvancedCellTraining.com. Be inspired to heal in new and expansive ways. Your life is too precious to ignore.
Pamela was just discussing with us fascinating article being written for Discover Magazine. Can you elaborate a little more on that, Pam?
Well, sure. Our ebook, which is going to be out on Amazon and also on the Discover website in a couple of months, is called Ticked. And it is about the mystery of Lyme disease in the South. And I don't know how many people really know the story of Lyme in the South or Lyme in the South or the fight over it. But essentially, there are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, the numbers are really not clear, of people who have a bullseye rash and Lyme symptoms in the South, but never test positive for Lyme disease. And there has been a war over this for decades. And the proponent of the patients was the late Dr. Ed Masters, who died at age 63 recently of diabetes. But he studied these patients. He collected their rashes and their blood samples. And essentially in the South, because it's very hot there, the cycles of hosts and ticks and pathogens are so much more complex and also more multifarious. There are more ticks in the South. There are more species of everything. There are more cycles. And basically, they, in looking for where Lyme could be coming from in the South, Dr. Masters and almost anyone who looked into it zeroed in on the Lone Star tick, which is now not just in the Southeast anymore. It's out all the way. It's gone all the way out west to Oklahoma and Texas, and it's gone east all the way up to Maine and beyond, so it's a big issue for all of us. They felt that this tick was a vector, it was the vector, the carrier of this Lyme-like disease in the South. But after searching and searching and searching, nobody ever could find the Borrelia burgdorferi spirochete in there. They finally found a Borrelia in the Lone Star tick, Borrelia Lone Stari, but it turned out not to be a pathogen of human or any mammalian disease. So they kept looking. And now there are a new generation of researchers using more advanced PCR, RNA, other technologies, gene sequencing technologies at places like Texas A&M and the University of Northern Florida and other universities. And they are finding other spirochetes in these ticks. The research is really quite, you know, it's initial. It needs to be replicated, but at least they're on the trail of finding some kind of clue as to what is going on in all of these cycles. And meanwhile, it appears that many other people are saying that there is no, you know, like, for example, like the CDC seems to feel that this rash that's a ringer for the Lyme rash is an allergy to tick saliva. So that's the other stance, and it is with all of these people sick with what appears to be Lyme disease, it's a very important issue to look into. And since the Lone Star tick is spreading everywhere, it's important for everyone. Yeah,
definitely. This Lone Star tick, I understand, too, is very aggressive. Like, it's a fast mover when it gets on your body. It's quick to find a place to
infect. It's very aggressive. It's a very aggressive human biter, much more so than the black-legged Ixodes scapularis that is the major vector in the Northeast and Midwest.
Well, this is a remarkable amount of work that's being done in the South and so needed. I was down there speaking in April, and people in North Carolina were telling me, oh, gosh, I go to hang my laundry out on the line, and I come back, and there's five ticks crawling on me, like, in half an hour.
Well, there's no question that those Lone Star ticks, I mean, that's not a controversy, that those Lone Star ticks are there. The controversy is really proving that there's this the transmission of the pathogen, and that is just going to require the more sophisticated molecular technologies than have been brought to bear in the past.
Yeah, we need the money and the focus really on this kind of research work, desperately. Listen, Pamela, we have someone on the line with a question, Zach. So, Zach, let's hear what you have to ask us.
Yes, I was wondering if there was, well, first of all, thank you for taking my call. I've really enjoyed your show. I was wondering if there's any connection between Lyme disease and mental illness, such as depression, anxiety, bipolar, or even any symptoms of those disorders.
Well, there's a great deal of evidence in the peer review literature on the connection between Lyme disease and neuropsychiatric disease. It's the condition is called neuroborreliosis because the spirochete gravitates to neural cells, and yeah, there's a connection. It's not a controversial connection. The connection between Lyme disease and OCD is well validated. The connection between Lyme disease and depression and anxiety has been widely reported in the scientific literature.
Very much so. A lot of people have suffered with those symptoms. I was a person too that had terrible anxiety and depression when I was sick with the Lyme. So thank you for calling in. We appreciate hearing from you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And visit some of the websites like LymeDisease.org. They have good resources in helping you find some practitioners or support groups in your area and maybe getting help from a doctor that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to Limelight Radio. Tell all your friends we're the cutting-edge show, place to be for Lyme disease news.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
Thank you, Zach. Pamela, I want to go back if we could. We're going to station break in a few minutes, but let's highlight again if we could what we were talking in the very beginning about the persistence of Lyme disease in the chronic form and how people struggle with this for years and years and years. You know, I was misdiagnosed for 5, bedridden for 2. I meet people all the time, you know, a decade or more. And you informed me about research study work done at Tulane University on this.
Well, the issue about Lyme being chronic, if it's not treated, is not controversial. If you have an infection and it's not treated, you can be bedridden for many years until you're diagnosed and treated. The controversy comes in Lyme disease is after treatment. Like people are treated for Lyme disease, and a significant percent stay sick. In people treated early, about 10% don't respond to the standard therapy, and in those treated late, it's about 20%. Those are very big numbers, especially when you think that we're talking about the 300,000 a year that just meet the most conservative definition of the disease. And the question is, when those people don't get better after they're treated, do they do they have a persistent infection and need more antibiotics, or have they now suffered an immune problem? And so the question has been asked in a number of species. There's been a significant evidence of infection being persistent, but we really need to ask the question in a species closer to us. And so there was a research at Tulane in rhesus monkeys, and they do find that the spirochetes survive in collagen after really extremely aggressive treatment. That is still not absolute proof, according to the bar of science, because the question remains, even though the spirochetes persist, the Tulane researchers find that they persist in low numbers. So then the next question they need to ask is, are those spirochetes viable enough and numerous enough to cause this illness? Are they provoking some kind of immune reaction that in some people creates this sickness? And that's where the research is now, but it does give a lot of it gives credibility to those people who feel that they are still infected. They indeed many still may still be infected. Whether how that low level persistent infection, largely in tissue like collagen, is playing out in terms of the disease, and whether it's largely something we treat with antibiotics or we deal with the immune system side of it, that's a question still to be answered.
Definitely. And I think that's really, in my opinion, that's going to be a huge breakthrough point when we can better understand why are some people susceptible to this autoimmune style response in a long-term nature, and why do others with their particular constitutional type, you know, strengths and weaknesses, respond, as you said, and recover and move on. That's very, very informative.
By the way, the phenomenon that they studied at Tulane was not autoimmunity. It literally would be an immune response. It literally would be these remaining spirochetes actually causing a cascade of cytokines that mm-hmm. then create symptoms, versus an autoimmune response in which the body in which the immune system recognizes a molecule, a protein in the body that's like the spirochete, and it attacks it instead. That's yet another issue. That's yet another issue in addition to
that's
this.
That's a whole other issue together, right? So now
that's
we're getting
right.
into slices of different issues that are all evident with this infection. Pamela, we have to go again to our station break and listen to our sponsors for a couple of minutes here, and then let's come back because there's more to talk about.
Okay.
If you want to write a book, find your soulmate. Change careers. Saskia helps her clients to reinvent their lives through her breakthrough program, 7 Gifts to Unlock Your Breakthrough Miracle.
The daily support, the guided meditation, the powerful exercises designed of the 7 Gifts to Unlock Your Miracle to expand awareness and help me to consciously create the life I want for myself and my family.
You'll learn her proven secrets to unlock your miracle in just 7 days.
You know, each day I look forward to discovering what new technique or tool Saskia offers us in order to find our highest purpose. It offers that daily. I am held accountable for my goals to live a healthy and happy life. Right now, I have renewed energy to write my book, and I even wrote my first chapter after only 5 days of this program.
Visit BreakthroughMiracle.com to receive your free 7 gifts to unlock your miracle, or to schedule a free breakthrough session with Saskia. Call 978-302-0861.
ACT, Advanced Cell Training, is a restorative healing process created by Gary Blyer to address the body malfunctions that contribute to illness. This breakthrough learning program teaches health insights and principles, strategic integration of both traditional and alternative modalities, while clients train their own bodies to heal themselves. Visit AdvancedCellTraining.com. That's AdvancedCellTraining.com.
Laura Longley is on a mission to remove stuckness from your life for good and replace it with happiness. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for the Laura Longley Show, where authentic change takes flight. Say yes to that inspired you and goodbye to your stuckness as Laura and her guests deliver powerful ways to work through common problems in this fun and unique hit show.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Something happening here.
Welcome back to Limelight Radio. Today we have Pamela Weintraub, author of Cure Unknown, with us, and we are discussing persistence in Lyme disease cases long-term in individuals in a study out of Tulane University. And we also have a caller on the line. We want to get to you, Annie, in a second. But, Pam, finish telling us about this persistence in the study they did with the rhesus monkeys. That was pretty interesting to hear. The information that you were sharing with me about the doctors.
We actually lost her on the phone, so I'm going to get her back on, and then I'll let you know when she's on, okay?
Okay.
All right, great.
Hold on, everybody. We lost Pamela for a section here with technical difficulties, but we are talking about Lyme disease persistence in the chronic form for individuals, what many people call chronic Lyme or post-Lyme syndrome. And Pam has her new edition of Cure Unknown, wonderful book out that illuminates the controversy behind the whole Lyme disease epidemic and exposes a lot of what has been confusing over decades, why so many people have been sick and do not know why they've been sick. And Lyme disease organisms, tick-borne organisms, are very much at play with a lot of autoimmune-style illness and conditions that many of us have suffered with: fibromyalgia, migraines, chronic fatigue, bipolar disorders,
and Katina, we have Pamela back on the line for you.
Oh, welcome back, Pamela. Sorry we lost you there with a technical problem.
Okay, well, here I am again.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're back. So if you could elaborate and finish up telling us about that rhesus monkey study that was so clearly informative out of Tulane.
Well, the studies open the door to the question of what happens when people fail antibiotic treatment. And there's been all this debate about whether the infection is persistent or not. But these studies show that the remaining spirochetes are almost always there after in the cases of a long-standing chronic infection that has gone long untreated, and that they accumulate in collagen. And they become very quiescent or kind of dormant. And so the question of what role these remaining spirochetes, at quiescent, small in number, but there, have in the continued disease remains an open question. And it's something that's very important to look into. And so are these this opens the door for a new line of research that has been really, from official channels, it's been shut because the idea that infection is persistent has been from the NIH, from CDC, from places like that. They've insisted that it's been disproven, but the questions are more nuanced than does it persist or doesn't. Now we know that these spirochetes remain, and it's not really a question anymore. It's proven. What we need to ask is what role they have in the disease. What are they doing to the immune system? What are they, are they ever reverting and becoming not dormant and not quiescent and coming to life and multiplying again? These things need to be looked into in order to help people get well. Because just saying that now you've been treated and you still feel sick, so you're just crazy, is not an answer that patients can accept.
No, they can't. There's too many people suffering. But what I'm hopeful in hearing from your words is that the door is not closed.
Well, it may be. I mean, whether the door is opened or closed depends on the opener and closer, right? But from the point of view of a person who's looking at the research, it would be very difficult for a rational person to say, no, we should not look into this. And the mainstream community has used the treatment studies. There were five trials conducted over three studies to say that that additional antibiotic treatment does not work, and to say that this therefore de facto proves that there's no persistence. The studies were very limited. They were circumscribed. Their results were muddled and mixed. And the Tulane study was done as a replication of the trials by Mark Klempner that are the ones that are mainly used in the guidelines to argue against extra treatment. These Tulane studies were actually designed to fact check the finding in that study that when they looked for PCR and other evidence of remaining spirochetes in their patient samples, they couldn't find them. But what you can't do in patients, unfortunately, it's sad that it was done in rhesus monkeys, but you can't sacrifice and kill your patients and slice them open and look for spirochetes in their collagen.
Right. I know.
But when they did that with the rhesus monkeys, they found the spirochetes. So that calls those findings into question. It says to me, and probably to a lot of other people, that we need more research. We need to find out what's really going on here, that we haven't answered these questions.
Right. We haven't answered these questions, and the time has come. And I am hopeful we are going to start getting that research that we've been long waiting for. We have Annie on the line from San Diego with a question. Annie, hello.
Hi, hello. My name's Annie.
Thank you for joining us, Annie. What's your question for us?
Well, I have a couple. I don't know if you'll have time to respond to all of them, but the first has to do with just more of a comment I thought I'd add it in. I with respect to what happens when people fail antibiotics, I particularly sent away a blood culture before I started antibiotic treatment, a six-month course of treatment. I was got a positive blood culture from the advanced labs, culture that showed I had spirochetes. I did 6 months of antibiotics, stopped them, and a week later I sent away my blood and came back with positive spirochetes. I sent it off. I stopped the antibiotics for a week, and then I had positive spirochetes that showed up on the advanced labs culture. I'm of the opinion that I did this almost as a sense to try and prove this point. I'm a physician, actually, and I believe, I'm not sure what your opinion is, but I believe that there's a certain element of body of people out there who are trying to deny the fact that the infection persists and also deny people diagnosis. So I did another interesting kind of semi-experiment where I took my blood and I sent it off to At the same, from the same hour, at the same time, I sent it to Igenix Labs, and then to LabCorp, and then to Quest, all at the same time, to see what the, all the results are going to be for Western Blot. And, of course, LabCorp and Quest came back negative, and Igenix came back positive. Now, this was, you know, kind of debated amongst many people, but I'm just wondering what your thought is, or if you have any insight to the Igenix lab testing. You know, is there any motion for other labs across the country to update or make their testing more comprehensive to include more bands so that the testing can become maybe less false negatives? I don't know how familiar you are with the Igenix process.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
But it's basically it. Like my point or question has to do with, I'm just, you know, I made a statement about I believe that the spider feeds do exist. I've proven it in my own, you know, little test. I've talked to the advanced labs, and they said they have many people who are on antibiotics. They stop them, and then they have positive spirochetes growing in the blood culture.
But do you think that 1 week would be enough time for the spirochetes to, that seems, you know, like the conversion time back for Borrelia usually would be more than a week. And by the way, I want to mention, you know, the advanced labs test is very interesting because if the research holds up, it's a really very, important proof of concept that there, this infection is chronic, but you know the CDC has come out with a paper challenging the advanced labs test and basically saying that there's contamination there. And advanced labs is now in the process of refuting the CDC paper. So
exactly. Well, I talked to Eva Stuffy. I mean, I know very closely about what's going on with that and the patient samples were examined in an entirely different place than the controls were. One was in Pennsylvania, I'm sorry?
Annie and Pam, it's Katina for a second. We have to go to a station break, but stay on the line, Annie, and we'll come back and we'll finish the conversation. We're on to a great one here. Everyone stay tuned. We're going for a station break and then coming back.
The Oprah of Radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Hi, this is Katina Macris of Limelight Radio. Do you or someone you know suffer with Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, MS, allergies, loss of wellness? I did, and advanced cell training has been a restorative, self-healing modality, bringing renewed health and energy to my life. Thousands of others rave about the remarkable success Gary Bleier's cutting-edge healing approach at AdvancedCellTraining.com creates. Request their free DVD for self-healing work in the comfort of your own home at AdvancedCellTraining.com. Be inspired to heal in new and expansive ways. Your life is too precious to ignore.
Are you looking for positive answers to tough questions in your personal and professional life? On Purpose Radio with Karen Florence is a riveting show that will help you reveal your own truth and begin to live the life you've always wanted. Karen's dynamic approach to coaching people in all areas of their lives has made her one of the most sought-after coaches today. Tune in each Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific and 10 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit OnPurposeRadio.com.
Get inspired. Create the life you desire with internationally known radio host and motivational speaker Sue London. Sue inspires millions of people to overcome difficult or traumatic situations in their lives. People feel hope, courage, and are ready to move forward after hearing Sue speak. Book motivational speaker Sue London for your next event at AskSueLondon.com. That's AskSueLondon.com.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Welcome back to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. And I also want to say a special thank you to our sponsor, Advanced Cell Training, who helps bring this show to us each week. You can visit them at advancedcelltraining.com. We have on the line a call from Annie in San Diego, I think, and she's a physician, and we've been discussing with Pamela about testing for Lyme diagnostics. So let's finish what we were saying, ladies.
Well, I wanted to address the other part of it, the Igenex part of it, and I was mentioning when we were off the air and on the phone, it's a comparable situation to the CDC having a narrow surveillance definition where they catch this very definite kind of Lyme disease. You can almost think of it as like, quote, true Lyme, unquote. It's spread by the Ixodes scapularis nymph. It's vectored. You know, it causes the erythema migrans rash. It's the very narrowest tip of what the disease is, and these banding patterns that LabCorp and Quest use confer. They defer to that very specific, tight definition of Lyme disease. By the way, you know, the test used to be broader because the two markers, outer surface protein A and outer surface protein B, were removed from the test to from the CDC surveillance serology definition. They were removed really specifically to enable the vaccine. The vaccine was made out of outer surface protein A, and outer surface protein B existed on the same plasmid, which is a little bit of circle of DNA. They existed together. So the idea was that the vaccinated would then be seropositive in preparation for this vaccine. And this comes to me from mainstream sources. It's not a conspiracy theory. This is like from Dr. Phil. So that there wouldn't be mass confusion. So that if the people were vaccinated, the vaccine was made out of outer surface protein A. So if outer surface protein, if that were in the test, then everybody that was vaccinated would test positive. They wouldn't be able to really prove the vaccine or prove it worked even or tell the difference between Lyme disease.
So few people were vaccinated that I think this really needs to be looked at, in my opinion, because the number of people vaccinated compared that the problem is that by having such a narrow focus by the CDC that excludes people who to develop neurological injury that's permanent, becomes more of a problem than the problem of having a confusion with a vaccine.
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying what happened. You know that I'm not. I'm just explaining why they did it, and so this created a very narrow serological. It created a narrower test, and it missed a test that missed more people. The CDC would say it doesn't really miss that many people, but you know the fact is that the outer surface protein A and B are upregulated as the disease becomes more chronic. So it actually, you know,
really
it's actually a pretty serious thing.
It's a pretty serious flaw that they eliminated that piece. So I'm wondering, Pamela, from your insights, since you do such investigative work around Lyme disease, back to Annie's thought, do you have a sense that maybe other labs will be developing akin to IGenix or advanced labs? Do you have hope for that?
Well, IGenix casts a wider umbrella. You know, in line with the wider, they have, they look at more bands. They don't follow the formula that the CDC follows to call it positive. And they also don't require as intense a reaction in order to call it Lyme disease. And so given that the CDC itself says that its criteria don't catch all Lyme patients.
That's a huge problem. That's a serious problem with that approach. That's a serious problem for that to be an acceptable process in medicine.
Well, it's not acceptable. The other side, I mean, believe me, I am not defending the CDC. I'm just telling you that the other side of it is people that may not have Lyme disease, but then it gets swept in. So that's the push the other way. And you have these two, so you have all these people that really do have Lyme disease that are being misdiagnosed. They're not being diagnosed. They're allowed to get very sick. On the other side of it, you may have people that don't have Lyme disease that have something else and get swept in. So there's this constant pull and push of the sides. And I'm just saying that's what's happening out there. At the end of the day, all these serology tests are going to have to be replaced by something much more molecularly sophisticated. Serology is a test of the is a technology of the 20th century, and we're in the 21st century. We're just going to have to do better. We're going to have to find better tests that are genomically based, that look for DNA, that look for other molecular markers other than this crude serology. In anyone's hands, it's still crude. It may be the best that there is now, but it's inadequate.
I have to say that we only have a minute and a half left, sad to say.
Oh, my gosh.
But, Pamela, I want to ask you a question that's always my most important question. What has Lyme disease taught you?
Lyme disease has taught me as a journalist to be extremely skeptical, and it has taught me as a patient to be skeptical. I no longer go to a doctor without myself reading the peer review literature to make for a serious problem. For any serious issue, or if a family member has a serious issue, I really don't just treat as the gospel what any given doctor may tell me. I really am reading the peer review literature. I'm trying to talk to other people. I am trying to see if they know what they're talking about, because I feel that there's a long garden path that people, not just Lyme patients, but patients in general, may be led down a lot of the time.
Yes, it's been such an elusive condition and such murky waters that we've traveled in now for a while, and I can see how you must have all antennas up at every level when you do, as you said, visit a doctor or have a family or loved one perhaps with an illness related to tick-borne illness. So thank you, Pamela, for being on the show with us. This is a wonderful opportunity to learn from one of the great medical journalists, Pamela Weintraub. Her book, Cure Unknown, is an award winner. It's out in its second edition now.
I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long
You've been listening to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. Tune in each Wednesday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Get ready for some of the most provocative conversation with leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. If you've missed any part of this hit radio show, visit LimelightRadio.com. That's LimelightRadio.com. We'll see you next week on Limelight Radio with Katina Macris.
Then I go to my brother. And I say, brother.
You are listening to Transformation Talk Radio, the home of some of the world's most inspiring talk radio hosts. Please stay tuned at the top of the hour. We will be bringing you another amazing, educational, and inspiring show to get you on the path to transforming your life. For more information about us, please visit our website, www.transformationtalkradio.com. That's www.transformationtalkradio.com. There is not just one kind of radio show. Some radio shows are all about busting through and getting unstuck from the crust in your life. But the Dr. Pat Show? Well, she does it all. She's been helping people in all aspects of their life now for 10 years. Her interview style, her unique personality, the amazing guests she has on her show are all factors of what makes an amazing radio show. Please join Dr. Pat in celebrating 10 extraordinary years of talk radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat. Thank you for supporting us for the past 10 years. We are promising each and every one of you that this coming year, our 10th year anniversary, will be the best yet. We will be paying forward so many ideas, so many tools, so many gifts to all of you because you have inspired us to be better and better and better each year. For more information, please make sure you stay tuned to TransformationTalkRadio.com or TheDrPatShow.com. And remember, join me. Let's live life full out together.
Get insider knowledge about everything that is going on at Transformation Talk Radio. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com and enter your email to receive our newsletter. Stay updated on new hosts, inspiring guests, and good news articles from around the world. We look forward to having you join our community. Transformation Talk Radio's amazing hosts span from the Pacific to the Atlantic coast. With a world full of loyal fans, what's stopping you from joining our clan? Bring your powerful message to listening ears. We've been helping people do this for many years. Want to make a difference? We can help you out. Just give us at Transformation Talk Radio a shout. It's easy to get started with an email so small to host at TransformationTalkRadio.com, and then we'll give you a call.
Transforming the world, one listener at a time. Transformation Talk Radio, that's my line. Non-stop shows, 24 hours, 7 days. Positive talk radio is the new craze. Learn to live your life the best you can. All hosts of TTR will lend a hand. Transform, inspire, educate, create. Tune in now, our shows are actually really great. Tell your friends, your brother, dad, and mom to tune in at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey Moon, you want to know something groovy?
Yeah, Jess. What's that?
Dr. Pat has been on the radio for 10 years.
10 years? Are you kidding me? That's awesome!
I'll tell you what's awesome. She's bringing back the Pay It Forward campaign and Holistic Makeover to celebrate. If you want to know more or get involved, go to thedrpatshow.com or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thedrpatshow to get updates about everything we're doing.
You are listening to Transformation Talk Radio, the home of some of the world's most inspiring talk radio hosts. Please stay tuned at the top of the hour. We will be bringing you another amazing, educational, and inspiring show to get you on the path to transforming your life. For more information about us, please visit our website, www.transformationtalkradio.com. That's www.transformationtalkradio.com.